Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us at Alaska Edition. I'm Grace Jang, filling in for Michael Carey. Forgot his name. I'm with CBS 11 News. My guests today are Paul Jenkins, editor of Anchorage Daily Planet, and Eric Adams, reporter with Alaska Dispatch. Thank you both for being here. Thank you so much. Okay, so let's start right away with the Save Our Salmon Initiative, which the majority of Lake and Peninsula borough voters passed, and some say it'll stall development of the proposed Pebble Mine. Paul, let's start with you. What do you think about that? What does the vote mean?
I haven't got a clue.
You got to try.
I'll try. The Lake and Peninsula Borough is a borough of about 2,000 people across Cook Inlet, across on the southwest part of Alaska. Iliamna seems to be the most urbanized area, if you can believe that. I'm trying to think how many miles south of the Pebble Prospect, which is 17 copper, gold, molybdenum. I can say that. So we have a borough that basically is one of the poorest regions in the state, and the Pebble Partnership, owned by two international mining companies, wants to develop that prospect. This has been going on for years. And in the ensuing battle, it's been one line of propaganda versus another over the years. And it's hard to tell sometimes who's telling the truth and who's not. I'm not sure everybody knows what the truth is. But they are, this last vote, in a borough of 2,000 people, they managed to come up with 57% turned out for the vote. Of that 57%, it was almost 50-50. It was 200 and something, 280 to two. It was a 34-vote difference.
Very slim margin.
And so what happened is, before this, of course, the company line from the anti-Pebble forces was everybody in the peninsula borough. We're done with it. We don't want it. We hate it. Well, that's gone now. Now we find out that at least part of the borough wants to at least think about the partnerships planned out there. And so it's a whole new ball game at this point. Add to that, in November, a lawsuit was filed before the vote to try to stop the vote, because the vote's going to be meaningless in the end. Pebble Partnership sued, and the state sued. State joined the lawsuit, State Attorney General's office. The idea is that the Constitution gives the state of Alaska clear control of the natural resources and distributing them in the state of Alaska. No borough can make a law that seizes land or makes an appropriation or gives money or land or anything else away. The state can do that. And so I think everybody who's watching this, at least in the legal community, has a strong feeling that once this gets back to court, the Superior Court Justice here in Anchorage, or judge in Anchorage, is going to side with the Pebble Partnership and with the state of Alaska. It'll eventually go to the Supreme Court, because the anti-Pebble forces are well financed by Bob Gillum. He's a businessman who has, and he doesn't call it a lodge, it's a large house over there in that general vicinity. And he's been fighting this thing for a very long time, and he's not going to give up now. So that's where it pretty much stands now. Does the vote mean anything? Well, now we know that not everybody is against it, and that it's going to go to court.
Well, the anti-Pebble people are claiming that this is a victory because it's a majority vote. And Eric, you were in the area. You've been to Bristol Bay. Tell us your take on this vote.
Well, much about the Pebble debate I find interesting. Perhaps most interesting to me is how public opinion has been so deftly shaped one way or another, based primarily on advertising and public relations campaigns for or against the mine, and without so much as a single solitary federal permit having been applied for. Most of the people I spoke with on the subject in Bristol Bay, most of the people that I spoke with there on the ground at the Pebble Prospect, they worked for Pebble in some form or fashion. They worked at a lodge in Iliamna, providing food for people who work at the Pebble Prospect. They worked at the airport in Iliamna, where Pebble had sort of taken over the whole kit and caboodle, flying people in and out, flying in and out engineers, flying in and out biologists and the like. And so no one ever came out and said, you know, we're against this, because they were all on the payroll.
Right. It's hard to bite the hand that feeds.
Right, right. Does that mean that everyone out there is for it? I highly doubt it. You know, it's right. A really divisive issue. And one of the things that really I find most interesting or that has struck me in covering this issue is the amount of money being spent and thrown at these votes. You know, what, 1,000 people voted. You would have to imagine that at a bare minimum, $1,000 was spent just based on what we know about the APOC filings from Gillum and from what Pebble Partnership itself spent in the final days of leading up to the vote. So you figure at least $1,000, if not much more, in public relations around Anchorage and around here was spent on the vote. So that's a pretty expensive vote.
A Hollywood actor was even involved as well, and there was... I'm his
Wes
name.
Studi.
Yes, Wes Studi of Last of the Mohicans fame.
He's a hero of
yours. He was at schools, and the anti-Pebble folks said that asked the Department of Law to look into his presence at schools, talking about the Save Our Salmon initiative, and apparently Wes Studi and the former head of Chlista.
That didn't go anywhere,
Matthew
Nicolai. By the way.
It didn't.
No, it didn't. He made it very clear. Let me back up. Let me give you the disclaimer that I put on my columns and everything else. I work for, I'm the editor, right, of Anchorage Daily Planet. That is owned by Picaro Communications, which has various mining contracts, I guess. I don't know anything about them. They've got nothing to do, Picaro Communications has nothing to do with anybody involved in this thing. There's some other group that does. I don't know who it is. But knowing that, I still knew Wes Studi was going out there, and I was assured by many people who were there, that he didn't say anything for or against the mine. In fact, what he said was, I don't have an opinion, I'm here to look around.
Oh.
So he was star power, but that's pretty much all it was. And I think that particular complaint has been sidetracked. I don't think it went anywhere.
And that was what I went when I went out there. I was there to look around. Mm-hmm. I was there to see what had been done. I was there to see what was yet to be done. And you know, I walked away with just without even knowing whether or not the Environmental Protection Agency even thinks, without it having even weighed in on whether Pebble Mine can be responsibly developed. Without there having been a substantive debate about the revenues the state of Alaska could collect or should collect on mineral resource extraction, such that is proposed at Pebble, it's just struck me that those things don't seem to have been considered in the public debate, and that that regardless, one side or the other, both really was able to capitalize on people's the personal connection that Alaskans have to their salmon, frankly.
Right.
So
now, for those of us who haven't been able to get to the area or fly over it, does it look like a lot of work has been done? Is there excavation? Does it look like there's a mining company in town getting ready to start work?
Well, there are lots of helicopters in the sky around the Pebble Prospect. They fly everyone into and out of the prospect via helicopter. They are still working, regardless of the vote. They are continuing to work out there, as we have reported at Alaska Dispatch. You can see there are pads, there are drilling pads where they're drilling core samples. I went around and I looked at several of the boreholes that had been drilled. You couldn't see it from here to about 10 yards away. If you were looking at the ground, you would never see it. So you can tell that there's work being done out there. Can you tell we're not at the stage yet of a mine. This is a proposed mine at a prospect in the middle of 17 miles from Iliamna. So we're not there yet.
Now, if the Pebble
folks don't know if we'll ever be there, but
very true. Now, if the Pebble folks weren't there, what would that region look like?
Look like it did 10,000 years ago, I imagine. There's not. It's a featureless. There's nothing that really stands out about it except for it's beautiful.
Absolutely stunning.
I spent time over there. I used to go there and fish all the time, and Iliamna in that area. I love that area and the people there too. But if they weren't there and the helicopters weren't there, 10,000 years ago today, there probably wouldn't be a whit's difference.
Is there a school?
There's a school. There are more than one school out in that borough. So yes,
but they're finding some of them though are losing students because there is an out migration we were talking about before the show.
Can you touch on that, the out migration issue?
Not with a terrible amount of expertise. I can say that there is concern. There was concern on the ground, and there's concern, general concern about an out-migration of people from villages in rural Alaska. I mean, that's pretty well, well-documented
concern.
Across the state,
yeah. Right. So it really is. That was a huge topic, I think, at AFN last year, was the rural immigration to urban areas.
And we're going to go where the jobs are.
Yeah, so you have to.
And the Pro Pebble folks are saying that, that will stop. The project will stem the massive out-migration.
Well, they estimate, I was walking around up until yesterday with the numbers for gold and molybdenum and all that. But there's at least 1,000 jobs, they claim, will come out of this. And it's not 1,000 jobs on next Tuesday. That's 1,000 jobs spread over time. And in a borough, which has 2,000 residents, the impact of that is tremendous. So. And I'm not sure. Maybe you have an idea. I don't know. What do you do? What are they going to do if Pebble doesn't happen? What happens then? Nobody's really addressed that. What's going to happen in this borough, which has a real shaky economic base to begin with, if Pebble doesn't go forward and all of a sudden the money Pebble is spending there evaporates?
Do we know how much money Pebble has put in already?
I do not know that.
I do not know that. I know that they are on plan, according to an environmental engineer with the project. They are planning to apply for a wetlands permit sometime at the end of next year?
It's next year,
between 2012 and 2013.
They are so far from beginning any real work out there that it's really astounding. When you consider the fervor of the fight that goes on all the time about it. They're still running ads about that. So
it's really touched a nerve.
It is. It's definitely a very hot topic issue. Let's move on to, is there anything either of you would like to add to that issue? Okay, we're going to move on to it.
We're all looking forward to seeing how this is a great story, and it sort of pits some very primal forces against one another here in the state, and I'm looking forward to continuing to cover it.
Eloquent way to put it. Now, the next big story this week, the cotton coring case, sentencing is going on right now as we speak, right? Both Cotton Coring filed their intent to change their pleas. Your colleagues, Amanda Coyne and Jill Burke, are in court right now. What do you know so far?
That is correct. Two of my colleagues are at the hearing, and two of my colleagues are at Alaska Federation of Natives, so I'm here in their stead.
We're glad to have you, Eric.
thanks. Here's what we know, who knows? I mean, this probe into Alaska's politics has been going on for, how long would you say this has been going on?
2007, I think.
2007.
So, or six. It's a lifetime.
I think it's been going on even a little longer than that, like the actual investigation.
The actual investigation, right. Probably longer than that.
And despite all the evidence and the money that's been spent to expose what was considered by many to be a deeply corrupted legislature, the mistakes that were made in the trial process by the government have left the whole process with respect to former Senator Stevens, who was exonerated, and then in the trials, the trials of Vic Coring and Pete Cott. Despite the initial guilty verdicts, the competency of the government was left in tatters, much the same as the Alaska legislature and the legislative process from the whole probe. So I'm not sure who comes out on top here. You have two former members of House leadership, the former Speaker of the House, former powerful Wasilla lawmaker, who was then Governor Palin's own representative, admitting they took bribes in exchange for influence on the taxation process. That's what's happened in the last week and a half. But with a plea deal, both sides avoid any further potential embarrassments at trial. With the trial, there's, as Jill, my colleague Jill noted last night when we were talking about this, with the trial, there's always the possibility that either Cott or Coring could have faced more jail time. There's also always the possibility that the government could have come out with another black eye. I know Mr. Cott's lawyer was aggressively pursuing the corrupted or unethical or out of control federal government angle. That defense could have further tarnished the reputation and public image of not only the Department of Justice, but the various other agencies doing work in Alaska. So with the plea deal, everyone sort of hedges their bets.
Let's talk about the time that they could be serving with the plea deal. Do we know?
As far as I know,
It's
time served, right. So
they could be free soon.
Well, they've been free.
They've been free.
They've been free for free. And they will remain free with the hope that in the plea deal, which the specifics are probably being reported as we sit here.
As we spit here.
Yeah. That they will have received time served and that their penalty will have been.
What do you think that Alaskans are feeling about these cases and the entire political corruption saga?
I think Alaskans generally are sick of it. Once again, the disclaimer. I was an editor at the Voice of the Times. I worked for Bill Allen. I don't think justice has been done in this case to anyone, either to the government or to Allen or to Stevens or to Cott or anybody else involved in this case. It was botched from day one. To me, I don't think the corruption was as bad, as awful as everyone wants to believe it was. I don't think we're ever going to know what really happened in this thing or how far it went. All I know is this, is that there was no justice in this. There just simply was not. And people are going to contend I'm crazy. I don't care.
You might get some angry emails,
well,
Paul.
Gee, like I don't get angry emails. No, but I just think with the government's prosecutorial misconduct involved, I think it shook everybody's faith in the federal government, the Department of Justice, and the public integrity section, for crying out loud, you can't trust. Stevens, we lost the most powerful senator in the country. He was worth $5 billion a year to the state, whether you liked him or you didn't. He was worth $5 billion a year here. Plus, he was Uncle Ted. If you needed something badly enough, Uncle Ted would get it for you. We lost him because of this. And at the very end of the day, Judge Sullivan in Washington says, well, federal government, you've done such a lousy job, and even though you convinced this jury to convict Uncle Ted, I'm going to toss it out. And that's what he did. And so here we are. We're back at a point where, what? Allen bought somebody hamburgers and $2,000 for votes that he never really got, and federal prosecutors who have besmirched their reputation. I think the public, frankly, is just fed up with it.
Eric, in just a bit, I want to ask your take on this, but what's Bill Allen like as a boss?
I very seldom saw him. I got to tell you, as a journalist, he never got in my way, never told me what to write, never had anything to do with what we did. But I don't know.
I can't offer my take on that because I never worked for Bill Allen.
Well, not that part. Yeah. Do you think Alaskans are tired of all of this?
I'm not going to speak for Alaskans on whether or not they're tired of this. I can say pretty safely that Pete Koch's tired of it, and that Vic Coring's tired of it.
Yeah, I think you're
and,
right.
And
I bet
that
you're right.
The FBI is probably tired of it. The Department of Justice Everybody might be a little tired of it,
yeah.
And that everybody involved is probably ready to move on. I don't know.
And what? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know the pulse of the general public on this. I know everybody was seriously disgusted, and there was a lot of legislation that came out of that was sort of born in the baptism of that fire that people are revisiting now.
The thing they also avoid too, and they don't want to talk about it much, the thing they avoid with a retrial is you don't have to have Allen testify.
That's true.
You don't have to bring Bill Allen back in and have him discuss the federal prosecutorial misconduct involving him. I think they wanted to avoid that like the plague. I don't blame them. Let's just hope that whatever happens again, I think, and the question the Daily News asked in its editorial was, well, will this head off people in the future? How could it not? I mean, it is such an ugly mess. I'm not sure how anybody in the future contemplating bribery would do it and hope to get not to get caught. It's just crazy.
Remains to be seen. Okay, before we're running out of time, but I definitely want to touch on AFN and the convention and the big announcement by Representative Don Youngs saying that he thinks that Alaska Native should be in that seat. Which one of you wants to start?
Well, there are a large percentage of Alaskans. They were here before we were here. They should have more to say about what goes on in this state, I think. They should have at least, they should have their say, and if they can get people elected office, more power to them, I think.
I agree with you, Paul. I think most people would agree. The Alaska Native sort of as a voting block really made a powerful statement, and many would say that they got Lisa Murkowski elected in 2010 in a riding candidacy.
Yeah.
It's an argument, but there's
no, it's inarguable.
It's unarguable, no. Correct. And so, I mean, as a voting block, that showed a lot of power to overcome a primary loss and to sort of make history, as everyone says, in her candidacy. So, you know, Don Young, his popularity runs deep and wide with Alaska Natives. He's a 20-term congressman from Fort Yukon. He was married to an Alaska Native. He's sort of a superstar with Alaska Natives, as his reception was sort of showed yesterday at the Alaska Federation of Natives. And he's fought for issues important to those communities and to rural Alaska. So I don't find it surprising that he would announce that the time has come for an Alaska Native, possibly even Alaska Native woman, to
lead
the
state. An Alaska Native woman did run against
him. That was my first sort of thought yesterday when I read
Diane Benson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll see who it is. You know, there are a lot of very capable, very charismatic, very smart Alaska Native Corporation executives and leaders, and a lot of people who I'm sure are really interested in getting into the public process and the civic process. So.
And excuse me, Congressman Young says he doesn't plan on going away anytime soon. He's running for re-election. And I spoke with Kyle Hopkins yesterday, who spoke with Congressman Young, and he also spoke with John Baker and asked if John Baker would be running for that seat, and John Baker said no.
John Baker is smarter than you might think he is. Yeah. Well, their AFN, the AFN's motto this year is strength and unity,
right.
And I think he hit on an important point. When they came together as a block, and the Native corporations, almost unlimited funding and Native votes, it was a historic write-in election, not seen since 1954 or something like that. I think they finally can see that, hey, if we all work together here, we can make this happen. And in that community, that's really something, because they have each of the Native corporations has its own aspirations, its own drives, its own needs. All 178 villages out there have got different ideas about what should happen. There's an ongoing running fight over how does the federal government treat us? How are we treated differently? And how come ANCSA didn't give the land and the money to the tribes and not to the corporations? And that fight goes on and on and on today. Subsistence, just for rural, or is it just natives, or native plus rural? I think your newspaper reported. And here we go. And to come together for that election, while all of this also plays at the same time, it's kind of amazing. If I were a politician in the state, I might be nervous.
And another interesting point that you made, and that was brought up more than once in our newsroom at Alaska Dispatch, was that this might well have been the first election, the post-Citizens United Supreme Court ruling election, where you really saw corporate money can have in the process.
Huge.
So that'll be interesting to see in future election cycles.
Okay, we have just a couple more minutes. Eric, can you very quickly give us the nutshell version of your medical home story? I know it's going to be hard to do.
It's okay. Quickly, Grace. I am working. I cover a few health issues in my writing. In some of the writing I do at Alaska Dispatch, mostly I do editing, but occasionally I get to write. And when I do, I like to write about health issues. I've been covering medical homes. In a nutshell, and this is how it's explained to me by the commissioner of the Health and Social Services Department, is it's the concept is that Alaska will begin 4 pilot projects, one in a rural area, one in an urban area, one in a tribal setting, and one in a rural non-tribal setting. So maybe Barrow, somewhere where there are a lot of non-natives who are also in a rural area. And the concept is to bring all of your patient, your decisions as a patient, as a person who has to take medicine and everything else.
I'm sorry, the music's coming on.
That's okay. Bring it back to one doctor. So that's the concept.
So check AlaskaDispatch.com for your story.
Read Alaska Dispatch and you can read more about patient medical homes.
All right, Eric Adams with Alaska Dispatch, Paul Jenkins with Anchorage Daily Planet. Thank you so much for joining us and thank you for watching Alaska Edition. Tune in again next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.